The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. Today, I'm spending more time addressing questions and issues that are important to you. Hence, I've decided not to have a guest today. Instead, I'll be doing several brief commentaries from different areas I think are important. Leading off with the latest on ozone, something new that I just read early this morning from the Peer Review Journal Spine. Also, I'll be talking about those spy drones. Well, they're becoming pervasive inside of America. This is just a continuation of my concern that while Americans are fully aware that their government's out of control, they're doing nothing to address this. We will. And time permitting, we'll also take on a commentary from Joshua Holland from Alternet. Our government is corrupt through and through. But where's our outrage? Also, Henry Giroux, American Democracy Beyond Casino Capitalism and the Torture State. And Harvey Wasserman's America's New Nuke Showdown starts now. Environmental issues, social issues, health issues, healing issues, that's what we address. Let's begin. I was speaking just the other day with Dr. Howard Robbins, a close friend and someone that, we have helped so many thousands, tens of thousands of patients over the years, decades. And Howard uses ozone, not only and not exclusively, and I provide the nutritional protocols. There's over 6,000 articles in the scientific literature concerning ozone. Let's just add one more. This is from an important source. It's a peer-reviewed journal. It was done at Dr. Negrin University Hospital in Spain. Quote, a shot of ozone, a form of oxygen found naturally in the atmosphere where it shields us from the sun's harmful ultraviolet rays, could relieve your backache, say scientists. Studies have shown an ozone-oxygen gas mix can shrink tissues and reduce pain. The gas mix is now being tested as a way to treat slipped or herniated disc pain. And they did a clinical trial and showed that this actually worked. So we also know it works for hepatitis, herpes, cancer, so many other things, chronic fatigue, cytomegalovirus, that can help get you out of harm's way, and especially if you're coming down with a cold or flu. So another good story showing the benefits of O3. Environmental exposures can cause asthma. This is a major study of 65,000 women who had no history whatsoever of asthma. And this was interesting because what they found was that the results suggest regulating the body's antioxidant defense system can play an important role in asthma prevention. Quote, the Shanghai Women's Health Asthma and Allergy Study has shown that an impaired ability to handle oxidative stress that arises from exposure to secondhand smoke and other environmental triggers may contribute to the development of asthma. Quote, we found that the host antioxidant defense system is compromised among those destined to develop asthma, and therefore these individuals may be less able to handle environmental exposures that may cause asthma. This was from a Dr. Larkin, professor at Vanderbilt University Medical School. So you have 65,000 people studied, you have a major university, and what are they telling you? What does all this boil down to? If you could take one thing away from this today, it would be, take your vitamin C, take your vitamin E, take quercetin, take your antioxidants, take your ORAC, because it strengthens the immune system and therefore makes you less susceptible to oxidative stress, which can then lead you to asthma and allergies. So, and it's right here. I mean, it says it over and over, antioxidant, antioxidant. But you wouldn't find the American media or the doctors on television saying, you know something, if we wanted to help all these kids in America and adults in America who have allergies and asthma, they should be taking 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C in divided doses, along with quercetin, 1,000 milligrams, 800 units of vitamin E, tocotrienols, 200 units, vitamin D3. They're not going to say that. They're going to say, well, we need more research. Well, it's just a theory. No, it's not. Let me tell you how much proof we have of the healing power, the preventing power, the therapeutic power of vitamins and minerals. How about 500,000 studies from peer-reviewed journals? You heard me right. 500,000 studies. It's taken a lot of time, a lot of resources, but we have all these. In fact, I had presented to the Codex Alimentarius and to the European Union Science Group an entire list of all 500,000 studies showing that the amount of vitamins they were suggesting people should have, which was infinitesimally small and harmonized, so everyone had to take the same amount in every country, had no basis in science. None. Zero. And I showed them that the amount of B1 and B2 and B6 and B12 and vitamin C and all the other vitamins and minerals were much higher from quality journals repeatedly showing this. Not one or two, but hundreds of studies. As a result, I said I would like an opportunity to present documentation as a scientist. And it was rejected. They did not want me going on the record and putting all this information into the record. So 500,000 studies from peer-reviewed literature showing the importance of vitamins and minerals and the doses we should be taking at, which are much higher than what we do, could have saved the day. But because this was a political fix, because the pharmaceutical fingerprints are all over this, the information was not admitted into any of the discussions. But you can take your antioxidants every day, take Hyorac, and protect yourself. For those of you who believe that genetically modified foods are safe, here's the latest. The European Union Agricultural Commissioner says he strongly favors traditional agriculture, meaning organic agriculture, that produces quality food, diverse diets, and natural biodiversity, requirements which he says genetically modified crops cannot satisfy. In an interview published early today in Romanian Daily paper, he slammed genetically modified food products, which he said did not meet the quality or diversity criteria that he, as a consumer, would opt for. So, good. It's good that policymakers around the world, including in Ireland, that's rejecting genetically modified foods in Japan, and now in many of these countries are saying no. A California farmer proves you can grow organic strawberries without using chemicals. This is from Ruben Claxon, Natural News. He says, when is the last time you ate a truly delicious sweet strawberry that had been grown using only natural methods of agriculture? California's first organic strawberry grower has been producing such crimson delights for 25 years. And his success shows that in spite of claims to the contrary, it is possible to make a living with organic farming. Jim Cochran, 63, farms just north of Santa Cruz at the Swanton Berry Farm. His early days of farming followed the common techniques of using fumigants and pesticides until he found himself poisoned by his own farming methods. In 1981, he was in a field that had been crop dusted the day before, and as the sun came up, the chemicals rose in a cloud. Although consumers think about their own health consequences from non-organic farming, it can be an event bigger. It can be even a bigger problem for farm workers. The year after that incident, Cochran was affected by methyl bromide, making him feel sick and weak. Quote, this was when it was becoming obvious that pesticides were way more harmful than people had been led to believe, he said. and because he wanted to protect his own health, he decided to start farming organically. From the start, he says, everyone said it was impossible to grow a commercial crop of strawberries without chemicals. But his obvious success should be sending a clear message. He is profitable, and he's been doing it. And this has been verified by researchers at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Now, my thoughts on this. I was actually growing before that organically in New York. I had the first organic farm in New York State that was actually a research farm, the Fertile Earth Farm. And I'm a certified organic farmer now. And I'm a beekeeper. I keep 40 colonies of bees, about 1.5 million bees, with no bee collapse, no colony collapse, because I don't use pesticides for artificial fertilizer, no genetically modified food, and there's no cell phone towers around that area, all of which can impact bees. More importantly, I believe that we will have an enormous market, a market so big that you could never supply all of the products that are going to be required come in the next few years, because people are going to find water shortages, food shortages, high food prices, more genetically modified foods, and more challenges. My suggestion is that people start learning how to do the organic farming, organic hydroponics, and doing sprouts, microgreens, and master that, see that it's cost effective, and then support your local farmers market, restaurants, health food stores, and food co-ops. You will be able not only to make a decent living, but you will also be able to supply a tremendous amount of food. In fact, you would have to be farming into the thousands of acres in order to supply all the demand that's out there and growing. Because when people start realizing how toxic our food supply is, how dangerous it is, they'll want to make, more and more will want to make it shift over to organic farming. Then when you can show that you're supporting a local market, even better. More conscious consumers want things that are grown locally. So those are some suggestions. I believe that we're going to have an enormous movement towards organic self-sustainability, homesteading in the very near future. Let's say in the next 1 to 5 years, I would anticipate about 3% of the American population moving out of the cities, maybe part-time initially, and full-time, and learning to redevelop into a different, slowed-down, no-growth economy. The existing economic model that's based upon constant growth is non-sustainable. The only way you can sustain a constant growth economy is to exploit all the natural resources into extinction and exploit the people who are a part of those resources. It's not going to happen. So the system of governance, the system of economics that we're currently using will be altered, will be changed. That is inevitable in the next several years. I believe that our economy will change radically into a Great Depression with massive social unrest and civil disobedience as soon as the American currency, the dollar, no longer is the currency of reserve in the world. And I believe that'll be within the next 3 years. So now's the time to be making your efforts at learning about sustainability. More than half of recent war vets treated by VA are struggling with mental health problems. That's a lot of vets. Upwards of more than 330,000. And they're getting 18,000 new patients being treated just in the last 3 months. And what they're doing, they're putting them on antipsychotic medication, they're putting them on major tranquilizers, and then the side effects are suicide. And we see the highest rates in America of suicide are in vets coming back and being put on meds. There is an alternative to this. I will be doing an article on working with a group of vets from the Gulf and Afghanistan conflicts who were suffering post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic fatigue syndrome, call force syndrome, suicidal tendencies, who today are normal and healthy. the protocols that I use, the people and their stories, will be up on the web shortly. Not a full documentary, but a video diary of their efforts will be on the web as well. And it's my goal, it's a goal, within the next 3 years to have a facility in a sustainable environment in the United States that would be exclusively for people returning from the war who want to rebalance themselves emotionally and spiritually, detoxify before they reenter their home life. And I don't want to see these people ending up homeless, trying suicide or hurting someone or themselves. If we can show that a group of people, maybe a small group, 20, 40 people, over a period of maybe 6 months to a year are able to rebalance their life completely, then that could be a tin plate that we could then take before the government and suggest this is what we need to do. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Studio in New York City. We're sending by us Elizabeth, who's been reading your emails, and she will discuss them with us. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Gary. Just to say that and the truth is generally much better than illusion, so people should have no fear.
No, truth is not something I ever fear.
Yes. Okay, the second thing is, this is something completely different, but I learned how here at the office that the Sunday that it's just passed, you travel quite a distance to take part in a national championship race. And you ran a great race, you did very well, but you didn't, as is custom for you, stay for the awards. You left shortly after the race had finished. But this made me consider, in your life, there's a sheer creative output. You know, lots of work, and you're actively engaged in challenging yourself every day, and you clearly find great joy in this, and whether it's a race or working on a new film or new ideas and writings that help further our understanding, but it's such a contrast to many famous people we know of today, whether they're alive or not with us, who are not who are only famous for what they did in the past, sometimes long in the past, or someone like a writer like J.D. Salinger, rather, or William Burroughs, or songwriters today who've not created anything new and relevant but continue to perform all their old music. And then actors who are still appearing in movies today, but for many, instead of producing the quality work of their past, seem to have sold out in favour of just being in the public eye. But then you have certain directors who may only bring out a relatively small number of films in their career, but what they do is absolutely unique and remarkable. Do you notice this to be true? And what are your thoughts on this, please?
Are you familiar with Kierkegaard?
Yes.
He said, life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. Mm. I would add something Cardinal Newman said, growth is the only evidence of life. When we're not growing as individuals on spiritual, emotional, intellectual, creative levels, then we are choosing the vacuum of life, that empty void, where the only thing that protects us from our depression, our incompleteness, is our capacity for distraction. So we then surround ourselves, depending upon our station in life and our mind, with various forms of distraction. So when you ask people, what have you done, they can tell you things they have passively participated in as spectators. But rarely do you find people who can show you what they've done in a constructive way to promote growth. Because growth can be painful. Growth means that you're having to go out of your comfort zone to learn something new. You've mastered something, now master something new. The reason that I race, the reason that I've, 650 or so races, is not to win. I don't even stick around. I don't pick up the awards. It's immaterial to me. And I'm not there to beat someone. I have too much respect for the other competitors to profit from their loss. Instead, I'm there to challenge myself. Every athlete knows what the best they have done and therefore asks, is that the best that could be done? The standard thought is the older you get, the weaker you become, the less strength, agility, speed, endurance. It is my goal to challenge that. Because I've helped so many people reverse the aging process and reverse the disease processes. And diseases, in fact, even tonight, we'll be having our final meeting of the brain healing group, and they'll be telling their stories. You'll see people who've made remarkable progress. None of this will make the news because it's a challenge to the existing paradigm. People who don't want to be discomforted by learning that maybe what they're doing isn't helping people, actually hurting people, they're not going to change directions. They're too comfortable doing what they do. When people get too comfortable in their relationships, too comfortable in their life, too comfortable in their own skin, then they've stopped growing. Then what is the meaning of their life? Just repetition until they die? Or until a passage forces them into a new realm of life, but they're not prepared for it? So I believe that we have a responsibility to challenge ourselves in constructive ways. And since everything becomes a new learning curve, when you do something new, you're at the bottom of that learning curve, and everything you do honors growth within that learning curve. So I think that that is what we must focus upon. Growing new. When you become independent, that's a great step, a positive step, from being a Democrat or Republican. They've had their day and they're dinosaurs. Their intellectual conceit is palpable. They have no answers whatsoever. And the blathering musings of Keith Olbermann or Rachel Maddow, these other people, are only there to challenge the opposition and to protect a part of their own rigid ideologies. We don't have an independent group of voices in the media, the exception of the Progressive Radio Network. That's why so many people listen. That's why it's the fastest growing in the world, because we have a forum for those voices. Even progressives need a growth forum. They should be around people who are growing, who are being pushed to grow. I train best. I remember the best racing I ever did in my life was when a whole group of us would meet in a natural living running walking club in the 1980s and 90s and pushed each other to do better. And we did. Now I have just to push myself. Because at this point in my life, I'm traveling alone. I'm not in any relationship. I'm working every day because that's what's needed in order to provide the tools for social change and for helping our society heal. I can get back to enjoying the things I've always enjoyed, the racing. I'm giving myself now 3 months break from racing. And in fact, I had to catch a plane, so I had to get on the plane in my running gear. But that's so be it. But it's all about growth. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, now, a quick commentary, and then I'm going to open this up for calls at 888-874-4888. And here it is. This is from Joshua Holland from Alternate. Last week, jurors in a federal bribery case got a taste of good old-fashioned corruption as New Orleans' former chief technology officer, Greg Milford, offered the prurient details of how one vendor, Mark St. Pierre, plied city officials with $900,000 in bribes and kickbacks that included luxurious travel, use of a yacht, and boozy good old boy poker parties complete with requisite hookers. The story represents the kind of corruption that makes splashy headlines and, of course, rightly outrages people. But the impact of this kind of criminality on our governance pales beside that of the everyday, entirely legal kind of corruption most people seem to take more or less for granted. Consider just a few items ripped from the headlines during just the past few weeks. On Monday, Politico reported almost one-third of Blue Dog Democrats who left office were defeated in last year's midterms are now working as corporate lobbyists. The conservative Blue Dogs formed a key voting bloc for much of last congressional session, drawing impressive fundraising from big oil, big gas, big pharma, insurance. Yeah, the Blue Dogs are instrumental in watering down or blocking key Democratic legislation in both the House and Senate. With their mission accomplished on everything from health care reform to financial regulation, Politico notes that industry groups then abandoned the pro-business coalition in favor of its GOP opponents. An analysis by the Center for Responsive Politics found that, quote, House members who defeated a measure to end certain subsidies for oil companies received 500% more campaign contributions, of course, from oil and gas. Separately, House members who voted to continue the subsidies received, on average, 500% more money. And overall, members who voted to continue subsidies to the oil cartels, gas cartels, and nuclear cartels received $8.7 million in campaign contributions just from oil and gas interest just last year alone. 16 of 18 U.S. House members who received over $100,000 in campaign contributions from the industry voted to block debate last week in a move that would prove eye-popping for even the most cynical good government types. FCC Commissioner Meredith Baker announced that she would be leaving her position early to take a cushy lobbying job for Comcast just months after approving Comcast's merger with NBC. And by the way, she's not the first person to do that. All the people do that in Washington. So that's how it works. And that's unfortunate. Corporate America has bought our government and bought all the legislators, and then they profit from it. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. Any of the issues that we discuss on this program at any time are fair game. Please call in and share your points of view. Let's go over now and say hello to a listener standing by, Howard from Brooklyn. Hi, Howard.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? I listen to your show quite often, and my it's hard for me to remember facts, and I was just talking to a colleague about how vaccinations are not proven to be healthy and effective, and he says that there's no actual real studies and that how vaccinations are actually vital to killing, I guess, most like smallpox and polio and whatnot. I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Well, like many people, I also was curious. If we're told, and now in New Jersey, Governor Christie has not done what he promised before the election. Gee whiz, why should that surprise us? He said that he would be for freedom of choice, meaning no mandatory vaccines, not Gardasil. But now New Jersey is about to pass a law that would make all healthcare workers in the state of New Jersey take the flu vaccine and other vaccines. These contain thimerosal, like the H1N1. So we defeated this in New York, and I went before the New York State Legislature Committee and their top doctors, and I was supposed to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning, or I was supposed to be the first one because it was the first one actually there and signed up, and you're supposed to be able to testify under oath as you sign up. Well, they end up having me near the end of the day when the news media had gone, when the place was empty, there were just the commissioners, and one doctor, Dr. Schachter, who they must have thought was a part of the state legislating film group, he was sitting over there on their side. How he got over there, I don't know, but he filmed it. And I was supposed to talk for 12 minutes. I gave him 110 pages of scientific evidence showing that vaccines have never been proven safe or effective for a given person. And the so-called gold-blind, double-blind standard of proof never existed. The 27 studies they constantly cite, I showed how each and every one was flawed. And in detail, I showed in effect that we had allowed the pharmaceutical industry, responsible for killing millions of people over the years, to be responsible for safeguarding us from their own product. And anyhow, it's a searing discussion, not the kind that you normally see when someone's testifying before a congressional or a legislative body. I did not defer to them. I did not recognize them as having the truth. therefore I wasn't about to bow down to them. Watch that on YouTube. Go up on YouTube, Gary Noll videos, and watch the three parts. It was 22 minutes. And fortunately, he filmed it, because had he not filmed it, the millions and millions of people who have seen this wouldn't have had a chance to see it. But I gave them the actual documents, so they weren't ignorant of the facts. They simply chose not to use them. There is no science supporting the safety and efficacy of a given vaccine in our society, yet we continue to mandate them as if there was all this science. There is not. Hope that answers your question. Let's say hello to Frank from Manhattan. Frank, you're on.
Hello, Gary. I just wanted to say that I agree with you with the two-party system. In 1968, we tried to stop the war in Vietnam when Eugene McCarthy was on the ticket. I was only 18, and I fought, and I couldn't vote, but I fought to, you know, to stop the war. The war never stopped. And we're still at war. It's the same system. It's called the military-industrial complex. They'll put Obama, they'll put Clinton, whatever. I don't vote for those people. I agree with you. And let's form a new party that works for us.
We need a progressive party. We need a progressive party that combines the humanistic values of libertarianism.
Right.
Meaning all that's good about libertarianism, and take off and dissect that which is not.
But what we're not learning, Gary, is that each person they put in there is just a puppet, and that the problem is the two-party system.
Frank,
Obama's not the problem. It's the
you and I know it. I'm simply saying that when we bring progressives together, the constitutionalists, the Greens, the Peace Party, the libertarians, we bring the best of what works from each one, we create a new system, and we bring people forward into these offices with platforms that they would have a hard time debating. Thank you, Frank. Anthony from New Jersey, you're on.
First, I'd like to thank you for all your wonderful insights that you give every day, and hopefully you can keep on affecting people the way you do. And commenting on the last caller's idea, not idea, but thought of this progressive party, I believe it's inevitable. These people will get together. They will make a difference because it's going to be for the better. And I really believe that. You commented one time how people used to live in India just farming and living life together. And, you know, I'm just a strong believer that that is going to follow through one day. And basically, I just want to thank you for all your ideas.
Thank you. That's going to happen a lot sooner. You're going to see that happening in the next 2 years. Thank you.
I'm ready for it, Gary. I'm waiting.
Good. Yeah, it's going to happen. Dawn from Brooklyn. Dawn, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Gary. I listen to you daily. And what hits me very close to home is how you talk about Ralph Nader, and I've researched him on the internet. Is there someone waiting in the wings? Because I believe he's older now, and he's maybe aging out. Can we put a candidate up with the thoughts and for the future with Ralph Nader's ideals for the 2012 election?
We can't do it for 2012. It's not time enough to get a power group together of progressives. What we can do is we can get Ralph Nader, who is older, but look at the people who took office late in life, Benjamin Franklin in a very important position, ambassador. Look at the people who served our country, John Adams and others, John Quincy Adams, who were not young when they did that. And then ask yourself, if Nader is still of sound mind, which he is, and sound body, which he is, and eats healthy and cares about himself, which he does, then age is only a number. Let us not limit ourselves by the old stereotype that if you're a certain age, you're no longer acceptable. That's ageism. Now, are there other people? You bet. But we have probably 20 to 30,000 people that could be leaders. From the Chris Hedges, who could be a leader. Ron Paul could be a leader if he got rid of some of his lacking in humanistic values and used the ones that are good. My God, under any condition right now. You see, the progressives are going to take about 4 to 6 years before a real viable third party emerges with platforms and support. But in the interim, if we allowed a Dennis Kucinich or a Ron Paul to understand our needs, we wouldn't get everything we wanted. But if we got out of Afghanistan, if we got out of Iraq, if we started closing up the military-industrial bases, if we started deconstructing the welfare state for all corporate major corporations, in other words, no more subsidies for the oil industry, the coal industry, the nuclear industry, if we did all of that and got rid of the Federal Reserve And then you realize how much good that would do against anything anyone else could possibly do. So that's how I look at it. We'll work with what is doable that represents some progressive values until such time that complete progressives are able to work together. We haven't got working coalitions yet. We don't even have people really communicating yet. That will come. That will come over the next 4 to 6 years. Be patient, and that's what's going to happen.
Thank you, Gary.
Let's say hello to Paul from Staten Island. Paul, you're on the air. Oh, Paul just dropped. All right. Well, I'm going to take a few more calls here. So if you want to get on, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. And let's see if Elizabeth's in studio. She can ask another question here until people get on the line. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. Hi. I don't have any more questions here for you, but I do have a thought about so much seems to be wrong today. This is a large question. You might want to leave it till tomorrow, actually, if that's possible. It's a sort of philosophical question, historical perspective.
Okay, well,
would be
that
required.
I couldn't answer in a short period of time, but do you remember when I said the other day that there was information about Osama bin Laden's capture or killing? I do not believe we've been told nearly the full story.
Yes.
I said that they would had to have been listening into any communication because they have technology to do it. I even mentioned the airplanes that were flying over the Branch Davidian compound and heard all their conversation, knew how many people were in the building, where they were and what their status was, how much water and food they had.
Right.
Today, we found out the CIA was flying drones, a special type of drone, over bin Laden's compound for a long period of time and listening to all of his conversations, exactly what I said now is shown. If he was using a computer, you can bet they knew everything that he was watching and they knew everything he was talking about. So they would have been up on him at every level. Then my statement is, I don't question that bin Laden is dead. But how is it that if a man has been on severe kidney dialysis treatment that he would have been dead, or he would have had to have been getting dialysis from a physician? How many physicians, nephrologists, are expert in that area? You would be watching them. You would also be watching where the medicine goes for those kind of treatments. Bin Laden wouldn't be going into a public clinic. He wouldn't be going into a public hospital. Well, then how many people are getting treated outside of that? So you would be looking for that. Or did he not have kidney dialysis, in which case we were lied to? Either way, there is a big question mark. The fact that we would know where he is at, then it raises this issue. I believe that we may be looking at another Ronald Reagan, Republican, and they also did this with Yasser Arafat. He was the middle broker with Iran to get Reagan the presidency by getting the, because it was a tight race and it would have gone to Carter, but they had the October surprise. Suddenly, only after, 5 hours after Carter officially had to walk out of the White House and no longer was present, were the prisoners released. That was Reagan's people doing that. That was the October surprise. What we now know is that the CIA, the White House, military intelligence knew where Obama was for a long period of time. That meant they were looking for an opportunity to take advantage of it. And that's what I believe the American public has not been told. And also, they have not told us why they would not have captured him. He would have been the most valuable intelligence fine ever. So you don't capture a man, you kill him, then it tells me this could not have been done by accident. What were they looking for? What were they looking to protect? What information didn't they want to come out? Who would have been embarrassed? So you see, we have not been told this full story. It will come out over time. Let's say hello to Joe from New York. Joe, you're the last call.
Hi, Gary. I listen to your program all the time, and you talk about how important it is to wash fruits and vegetables. But you also mentioned washing nuts, almonds, walnuts. Is there a certain technique to wash them? How do you do it?
Yeah, I just run them under purified water in a bowl, agitate the water, rinse it, agitate the water, rinse it, and they're done.
Oh, that quick?
I am.
Okay, and can I ask another question, or is
quickly.
It too late?
Yeah.
Okay. As far as taking blood tests to see what your numbers on, say, on C-reactive protein, someone told me that taking blood tests is just like taking a Kodak moment, that it's only for the moment. So if your C-reactive protein was very, very high one day, and you take the test a few months later, and it's very, very low, that it doesn't necessarily mean that it's low.
That is correct, but you generally don't have most of your body chemistry fluctuating in such a radical manner. It generally stays within a range. If it's high, it stays high, unless you've intervened to cause it to go low. If it's low, it stays low, unless you've intervened to cause it to go high. So that person, I would challenge, is not accurate. Okay, all the best to you, Joe. We're out of time. Thank you all very much for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
Like I love you. If he did, he wouldn't break your heart. He don't love you like I love you. He's trying to tear us apart.
The Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.
The handsome guy that you've been dating. Whoa, I've got a feeling.